Hello and welcome to the Sigma Update. I'm QX and I'm joined by, again this week, Joe Arminio. How are you doing, Joe?
Doing pretty well. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. I lied to you guys last week and said it was a one-time thing, but timing has worked out with CW on vacation, and we decided to join the Dev Update and the Sigma Update as one again. And we're going to try to keep it under 2 hours again this time. So like last week, I'd like to start out, Joe, just with a couple questions pinged your way, just to get some clarity on simple terms for people watching, to keep in the spirit of the Sigma Update, to kind of dumb things down or simplify them. So a good topic, I thought, this time might be, let's start off with the origin of SigUSD, version 2 of SigUSD, how that grew, and then we'll touch on a few other things after that, if you don't mind giving us a start on that.
Okay, so SigUSD is a implementation of a protocol that's called AgeUSD. That's something that Bruno came up with, who was doing some research for IOG. And the essential question is, how do you create stability in a volatile environment, right? And we can look at it in terms of connecting it to the dollar, which SigUSD is pegged to the dollar. But the reality is any price feed you could potentially grab and plug into that, you have the ability to tie an asset to. You know, stability is actually a very complex question. Even the dollar itself is not stable in terms of its purchasing power or its value in reference to other currencies that's floating every single day. And so if you take a, I'm going to say, hyper volatile asset like a cryptocurrency, you know, how do you create stability in a secondary asset price? It's essentially some kind of derivative framework. A derivative is basically where you create a contract to price a secondary asset based on another asset, right? And so the goal of SigUSD is stability, right? And that's why we see this range of backing, you know, where the trading range to mint both sides or both tokens is between 400 and 800% of the reserve ratio, because you need that excess reserve as a way to mitigate volatility.
And just a sidestep on that, that's you actually have a chart, and I'll put that up in the middle of the screen, that you can't, correct me, you can't mint under 400, or you can't cash in under 400 and mint above 600 or 800, what was that?
So the goal there was to create two tokens, okay? One of the tokens is SigUSD, and that is the dollar derivative. The other is SigRSV, and what that represents is a claim to a portion of the treasury, the value of the treasury. There's a certain misconception with some that it is referencing the price of ERG, not directly. It's referencing the price of the treasury, which holds ERG. So there is some connection there, but it's not direct, right?
So in short, if I buy SigRSV, it's guaranteeing me a ratio of the amount of SigUSD in the bank at the time that I cash out.
Correct.
So yeah. If that USD goes down, I'm going to have less SigUSD to cash out. If it goes up, I'm going to have more Sig. I'm going to have a higher chunk of change to cash out there.
If you don't calculate people that are exchanging their SigUSD for the reserve, right? Because that reserve also represents a allocation of SigUSD. So you have the ability for someone with SigUSD to claim from the treasury, and the net value of the treasury drops even if the price of ERG goes up. So it's not quite so simple. You have a lot of player versus player racing going on.
So essentially two things can be watered down, essentially, your SigUSD pool and your SigRSV pool, depending on how many people are in either one at any time.
And they affect the treasury. So, you know, you have racing, let's call it. It's nobody's on the same team. There is no team RSB. There is no team SIGUSD here. You know, the SIGUSD team, in essence, are racing against each other. If they're using that as a mechanism to short ERG. And the SIG RSV, because if I have a claim on the treasury and you have a claim on the treasury and we're both trying to cash out of the treasury, right? Whoever gets there first is going to, let's say, hopefully get some profit from that trade. But now there's less in the treasury for the next guy.
So trading aside, Joe.
Yeah.
Trading aside, you know, let's set all that aside where people use it as an arbitrage and a money-making mechanism. What exactly is the benefit of SIG RSV to SIG USD in the purpose of keeping SIG USD pegged to a dollar?
Okay, so what SIG RSV does is it takes a aspect of risk, right? Where you are basically creating a claim to the treasury, right? And so in a volatile environment, you know, the assumption is if the treasury is going to grow and SIGUSD is going to essentially be used more in reference markets, right? Because if I mint SIGUSD and I then go into, let's say, Spectrum and I use it to trade with, right? I'm not using that as a vehicle against the treasury. What I'm using is I'm using that as a vehicle for liquidity. And, you know, as the ecosystem grows, some people may make an assumption that SIGUSD is going to be used less within the bank itself and more in reference markets as a way to potentially, you know, take ERG and put it in a liquid form and then use that liquidity for a secondary investment. The more that happens, you'll see less interaction with SIGUSD and the treasury itself. And it kind of becomes this cash-like token on top of the Ergo blockchain that acts more like a traditional stablecoin rather than something to short ERG with, right? So as the ecosystem grows, there's a certain assumption that that might happen. And so some people that take a position, you know, in, let's say, having the value of the treasury, I would say have that long-term assumption, which may or may not be true, right? There's risk there. It's hard to actually say how that will develop, but that's kind of the general thinking. But it's important to recognize that SIG RSV represents a portion of the treasury itself, not directly tied to Ergo, but indirectly tied to Ergo, considering the other actors and what they're doing.
It's definitely a hard thing to wrap your head around, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that was helpful. And what can you speak a little bit about the change that SIGUSD had to go through in order to circumvent some, I don't know if it was front running or whatever was happening with somebody there?
Okay, so initially, there was a attack vector that specifically, there was a actor out there that I don't know who it was, but they had a large enough position that they could manipulate the Oracle, right? And so what they were doing is they were taking a position in SIGUSD, and then they were using the reference markets, in this case exchanges, that, you know, the contract pulls from multiple exchanges and updates kind of the contract based on the reference price, right? So he would take a position in SIGUSD and then go out into exchanges and he would sell, and then cash in his SIGUSD once the Oracle reported, you know, the lower price, which means he was kind of using that to short the entire protocol. So, you know, what, you know, there was a couple of attempts at that. Some of them were successful. Some of them actually were pretty painful in terms of the actual size loss. Because that's at that point, some people in the ecosystem picked up what was happening and were tracking his wallet and saying, okay, well, if he's going to dump ERG, we might as well see if we can get a discount, right? So there was kind of a community, bear whale hunting community that got together. And then, you know, it was obvious that, okay, this is a vector of attack that we need to be aware of. And we don't have enough liquidity on external reference markets to prevent that, right? Because if it were something that was, say, a larger protocol, you know, there might be enough liquidity there that if an actor tried to do that, they would just dump their tokens, basically. But because we were small enough that, you know, the reference market couldn't absorb that sell pressure, it ended up influencing the Oracle price. So we created this concept of smoothing. And, you know, it's actually somewhat controversial in the idea of having a smooth Oracle, because you get into this belief of, let's say, true reference price, right? Which is, it sounds, you know, some people would say, okay, your Oracle lies, right?
Can I stop it there, Joe? Just to refresh everybody, I know we spoke about oracles a little bit last week, but mm-hmm. oracles are essentially a reference point to pricing outside of its off-chain, correct? Mm-hmm. And it's essentially a index of what the price is of the coin at different spots in the market. Let's take KuCoin, let's take Huobi, TradeOrg, those kind of, not specifically, but those kind of points. So that allows SigUSD to reference that actual price there. Sorry,
yeah, go on. Oracle itself is kind of a stupid name, in my opinion, because it's like what somebody goes and talks to the Greek gods and gets some insight. No, it's literally a price feed in this instance. It's just blockchains are blind to the external environment, so we need to build a mechanism for it to get an external price feed.
And that's trusted how?
Through our system, it's through a distribution of actors and a distribution of price feeds from multiple reference points.
So a couple different actors check similar price feeds and then get together and agree on it, and that updates the Oracle.
Yep, get some consensus mechanism.
Awesome.
So,
sorry, go for it. Yep.
So the actual Oracle feed in SigUSD has certain parameters in terms of the amount that it can shift over time. And some people would say, okay, your Oracle lies, right? And to some degree, I would agree. It's programmed to, right? So it's not as though it's like a unknown. But I would also point out that if you look at any market in the world, most price feeds lie, right? If I'm trading on the, let's say, NASDAQ, right? You have people that will pay millions of dollars to have their server a nanosecond closer, because then they have a certain price advantage in terms of the price feeds, right? That is a kind of an open question, even in terms of like the advantage and your proximity to the price feed itself that's exploited even in traditional markets.
Doesn't it go beyond that too? Weren't there some exchanges that sell you, front run your data to third parties that then might do some things with the trades before you even can process your buy?
Yeah, you can look at that on the traditional markets where you have like a application like Robinhood.
Yeah.
You know, users are trading and then their information may be being front run by a bigger company, Citadel. And
nuts.
You can ask the question, is that an honest Oracle? Is that an honest price feed? Or are there points where other actors have an advantage, right? And I would tend to lean towards the thinking that this is not something that we can fully eliminate in markets. So we might as well have a set system that lies to us predictably, rather than having something where we have the assumption that it's true and it's not. That's unpopular to some people. That's okay.
A quick tidbit. Does the Oracle reference, was it built? I guess you can change it any time, correct? Does it reference Spectrum DEX at all? Does it include that price in there?
I don't think the current one does. Now, with the V2, we may be able to upgrade the Oracle feed in SIGUSD. That's something that we haven't really got into yet because we need a stable V2 before we consider that, right?
Gotcha. So how does, let's say in the instance of a bank run, how does SIGUSD in its current form try to prevent that or stabilize itself from dropping below the peg?
Sure. So the first thing is you have minting, let's say, limitations. You know, I guess in to some degree, you can look at that as like, I don't know, bowling with the bumpers up, right? Where, you know, if it's below 400%, you know, a certain action is limited. And that, you know, prevents, let's say, additional risk being added to the system. It at that point, it kind of becomes a game theory mechanism, right? Because usually what happens is the price of SIG RSV starts to change. And so it gives people a certain incentive that maybe they will take a position there for the risk incentive of, you know, markets reversing. It's something that I would not say is perfect, right? There are a couple of things that I would have liked to see done differently or would like to do differently, net. But, you know, overall, it has stayed pegged to a dollar for quite a while now in crypto time anyway.
Okay, so now there's a new thing coming out called Dexi Gold. And I imagine from the name of Dexi Gold, it's not pegged to the dollar. How's that work? How's it different from SIGUSD? What's it using for an oracle?
So the first thing to recognize is that when you have these frameworks, whatever price feed you feed into it, you have the ability to create that derivative. So, you know, if you look at AGUSD, could you create the same basic function and feed in gold or silver or oil or whatever? Sure, you just change the oracle. So DEXI is a little bit different. In SIG USD or AGUSD, I guess is the proper term for the protocol, you have two tokens, right? And those two tokens are used to kind of balance the risk assumption by having, let's say, trade-offs in terms of their profit and loss, depending on the price and the treasury, right? DEXI is something that actually came from within the Ergo ecosystem. It's based on a simple stablecoin design was the original name of it. It's something that we've kind of discussed as a community for like 2 years. And what you're trying to do there is to create two protocols to create the balance and risk rather than two tokens. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is you have the ability to program certain actions or parameters into those protocols that are a little bit more predictable than human behavior, right? In a way, they do have similarities. You know, one of the similarities of both is this notion that interacting with these protocols has a certain fee, and that fee goes to the treasury, right? And so you could almost look at that as a form of, I'm just going to say tax, right? It's like a protocol tax. And so, you know, this notion of, okay, if we can create enough tax revenue that it feeds into this protocol, the protocol itself can be autonomous and somewhat stable. That's kind of the goal of the DEXI framework, where you have this autonomous bank that has the ability to collect fees both from the minting action in the protocol itself. And then you have a secondary reference market, in this case, a DEX, that has a swapping fee mechanism. So the more that it's traded, it feeds back into that autonomous central bank. And that gives you two different price points, right? And so as they potentially float, it may be more beneficial to mint DEXI because the price, you know, the cost of that is lower than the cost of the price on the DEX. Or you could potentially redeem that if there's a price differential the other way. So you're using that two protocols and basically fee mechanisms to create stability.
And I imagine a lot of that stuff will be done, I imagine, by bots at some point, correct? People trying to game that.
That's an interesting thing that we've kind of already seen a little bit in SigUSD, is where you have some people that are, let's say, running bots and using, you know, the reference market already to try to maximize returns based on slippage and arbitrage. The nice thing about DEXI, and the reality is you could probably do something on top of SigUSD that did the same thing, is the more that it's traded, the more that it's taxed, right? And so that, you know, let's say liquidity and volume actually act in benefit of these protocols.
So once DEXI's in full swing, SigUSD lives beside it as another stablecoin?
Yeah, it's good to have, you know, like in full disclosure, both of these are experimental. Right. And it's important for people to understand that. So they take the appropriate risk assumptions. Right. A lot of DeFi, in my mind, is experimental. And so there is an element of truth of, OK, you need to, number one, try to know your assumptions as best you can. And the second has to do with risk management. Right. You know, with SigUSD V1. You know, I would say the team had no idea how popular it would be day one, because we didn't have, you know, ErgoDex at the time, or now Spectrum, as kind of the reference market where you could actually use the liquidity you created, right? We thought, hey, well, you know, we'll do it and test it and see how it works. And then in a very short amount of time, a lot of people showed up. And then, you know, there was a certain... I don't know, let's say disinformation in terms of SIG RSV and how it represented ERG. And some people thought there was leverage involved and all kinds of crazy stuff that then we had to try to go. And sometimes it's harder to teach people to unlearn something than learn something. So one nice thing about DEXI is it does have more limitations in terms of whale manipulation. I personally am not a fan of a lot of DeFi has like limitless power for liquidity. And I tend to think that creates a game where instead you have player versus player between the little actors. And then you have player versus protocol for the whales. And we've seen that time and time again, where, you know, when they have this disproportionate power in DeFi, you get actual protocol exploits because they have enough liquidity to actually attack that and trade against the protocol itself versus other players.
Yeah, yikes. That's very interesting. Thanks, Joe. I think that hopefully will help out a lot of people struggling with that kind of thing. I know that my first dig into SigRSV was, I think it was Cafe's fault, actually. He posted something in chat like, great time to buy SigRSV. And I was like, hey, let me buy a little bit and see what's up. And then, yeah, it didn't work out too well. I only tested a little bit, but that's that's good.
Yeah, even AGUSD in its current implementation, it's not perfect, in my opinion. I think there are a couple of things that could potentially be discussed or added, whether into the protocol itself or on top of it, that could create a fairer game. And, you know, ultimately, I think that's what DeFi should be, right? Is, you know, you are going to get this P versus P finance, where, you know, you're always going to have, you know, winners, losers, people competing, race conditions, that type of thing. But, you know, I do think that we could do better to have fairer games, basically.
Do you ever see DEXI Gold or SigUSD become a store of value for people on other chains coming over in volatile markets with Rosen at some point?
You know, you could all in theory, you know, like let's make a couple of assumptions first, right? First assumption we should make is that time demonstrates stability, okay? To where, let's say, a year from now, 2 years from now, you know, it's been in the wild, it's been battle tested, And time to some degree is what shows strong design. So it's like the more survivable it is, it shows it's non-fragile. And as it's non-fragile over time, you know, your assumption that it's less experimental and more proven holds true. Then sure, you could always take one of these, frameworks, and you could have, you know, a DEXI that's backed by Bitcoin, or, you know, SIGUSD that's backed by Bitcoin. It actually wouldn't be that difficult to do. You would just need Bitcoin and then the assumption it's a good idea to do it, right?
That's interesting. Very cool. Okay. All right. Let's, I think that's a good intro, Joe. I think let's head into the dev update, and we can, go along the way of questions that pop up about what people are doing. I think we covered pretty much everybody last week about who they are. If there's somebody we get to that you are, remember, that we didn't go over them last week, then we can try to hit them, but I might remember that, but otherwise let's dive right in. Starting off with Louis Vacha. We spoke about them last year. I'll take this one though. It looks like they looks like they're having some fun relaxing and ready to get back on the track next year with coding again, which is great. I think it's really important. I know that I actually, you know, and this is rare, right? I texted Gaza this morning and he's like, oh, sorry I didn't get to you sooner, you know, what was like an hour later. That's like years in Gaza time, response time. He's like, sorry I didn't get you sooner, I'm actually on vacation. And I think it's nice that these people are taking those kind of breaks. And
you gotta let your hair down, you gotta enjoy family, you gotta have good food, you know those things are critical in life
for sure. All right, let's move on to MHS Sam. And I think the first thing that I want to ask you about that I think would be cool to clear up for people is people hear chain TX, chain transactions thrown all over the place, but they don't know what it does. You briefly mind explaining how chain TX is more beneficial than just, you know, trying to hit it and wait?
Sure. So what a chain transaction does in, let's say, simple terms as I can try to come up with right now, is if you look at UTXOs as boxes, right? You have an input, you have your box, you know, you have your output, right? Your output becomes an input to a new spending transaction. And basically what you have the ability to do is link multiple transactions in a series of boxes to where the output and the input are interlinked. And ideally you have the ability to then send a series of blocks that, you know, can actually clear in the same block itself. I think I said block instead of box, but you have the ability to kind of throw these out in succession. And so if you look at what Rosen is doing, where you have a guard wallet that is either going to mint or spend, they need that chain transaction support to be efficient.
Yeah, and one of the, you know, from the programming side, excuse me, from the programming side at least, the error that pops up is called a double spend, essentially, because you can't spend a box that you've already tried to spend on something else. And let me try to simplify it as well with cash. Let's say I need to pay Joe and I need to pay Mark, and I have $7 in ones. Okay, so I pay Joe $2, I pay Mark $3, and then there's another box over to the right that my additional $2 go into as the new box that I own. So we need a judge per se, which is the blockchain, to verify that this actually happened and Joe received my $3, Mark received my $2, and my new box received my $2. Now, if I try to give, let's say Cheese, another $2 from that new box over to the right without the judge seeing it first, without the blockchain seeing it first, it's going to say, no, you can't double spend because I haven't verified that the money went to Joe, that it went to Mark, and that it went to your other box. What chaining does is chaining assumes that everything's perfectly fine. It assumes that the transaction's going to go through, that Joe's going to get the money, that Mark's going to get the money, that my box is going to get the money. So it lets me give a dollar to Cheese from my new box that has the $2. Now, let's say for something weird happens, right? And somehow I don't get all that money, or I spent more money in the first box, or something strange happens, then that chain is canceled, if I'm correct, right? It's just, it never goes through to Cheese in the end because something happened in that first link.
Yep.
Is that, does that sound dumb enough? Is that dumbed down well enough?
Yeah, I always like to try to use the analogy of like paying with cash to a series of people in the line where they hand it to the next person. If your money runs out, you know, you got a problem.
Exactly. Cool. All right. You want to take the rest of the stuff that you did?
Sure. So it looks like they've been continuing to debug and adding loggers and going through the reviews. It's one of those things where they're just trying to play with it, break it, fix it, play with it, break it, fix it, get it ready for the public beta test. You know, I know that last week he posted some transactions that kind of to verify, hey, we have been able to kind of, let's say, bridge. But, you know, I'm sure it's just one of those things, you put it in as many tests, simulations, weird situations as you can, and try to break it once we get the public test, which it looks like he's going to fill the Ergo faucet. You know, we'll have a new set of users that will come in with brand new assumptions and behaviors and hopefully break it again. And, you know, that's ultimately how we get a hardened framework as we get the community in there to beat the crap out of it. It also looks like they have a new logo and some graphic designs. So that's great to see some community contribution. I know that one thing I talked to MHS about, I don't know if he's got there yet, is having some, using a bot that will ping social medias as the test goes on. That way, you know, you get free engagement and hopefully, you know, it will give us a nice idea. Because I like that as a, like a social mechanism for watching a bridge, right? Just make everything as transparent and available as possible information-wise.
Now, Joe, somebody mentioned in chat the other day, and I spoke to it, and I want to make sure I'm somewhat correct here, or wrong, or correct me. Sure. Rosen can kind of act as a little bit of a masking protocol when I swap from chain to chain. Is that correct?
Kind of, yeah.
Like there's no, Cardano doesn't know what I do with the tokens on the other end. And when I come back from Ergo to Cardano, I can come back to a completely different wallet. And there's no, nothing in between that somebody can see what wallet that came to there, right? That's that information not saved in any of the registers.
Yeah, and depending on the liquidity, right? Let's say you move into the guard wallet on one side. On your return trip, if there's enough liquidity, you may end up with different tokens altogether. You know, there is
a
matching mechanism.
If I enter the guard with 10 Cardano and come back and pull 10 Cardano out within like 5 hours, it's going to be pretty darn obvious who did that, most likely.
Yeah, you could assume that, I guess. Yeah. But, you know, then you'd also ask the question, why would you bridge and then withdraw the same amount, right?
That's true.
Maybe not. It's hard to say.
Officer, it wasn't me, I swear. All right. Green Hat.
All right. So it looks like Green Hat and the Sigma Rust team. Looks like Soizer is working with the Ergo Lib Wasm, fixing a Sigma Rust issue.
I don't think we spoke about Soizer last week. Who is Soizer?
He's one of the community devs that's a bounty hunter slash, let's say, Rust developer. Wow. Good character. Looks like, as well, they're continuing to play around with the Oracle framework, specifically voting and changing around the number of oracles. One unique thing about this Oracle 2 framework is that your Oracle pool is actually somewhat fungible, where you have this Oracle token that you could potentially sell and swap places with if you didn't want to run an Oracle, or if you created some pool that had value you know, that it actually is like a certain commodity that can be swapped around, which creates a really interesting potential market for oracles. You know, if in my mind, looking at this is this framework, it would be really nice to see some self-organizing groups of oracle providers, to where if I was an application developer, I could say, okay, well, who has a reputation for good information, and what group has reputation for good information? And so you could almost see an external market develop in terms of who I would want to buy data from. And, you know, having that as somewhat fungible creates an interesting market that I haven't really seen before.
Can you run through me again what part of this, what part of the Oracle config or the Oracle information would be a token?
Well, in this case, you as a provider will have a token that basically represents your position in the Oracle pool, right? So you'll have the QX, you know, token for your Oracle data that you created to participate in, that becomes fungible, or you could sell it and move it across wallets. Oracle pools can expand in terms of operators. They can decrease in terms of operators. So that's part of what they've been playing around with this week.
Cool. Very cool. All right. We have Kushti next.
All right. So we have Node and protocol development, as well as all kinds of stuff. He's always all over the place. So he's been working with bootstrapping the UTXO snapshot. It looks like he's got it in chunks. It looks like the UTXO set with authenticated AVL trees is reconstructed from chunks. He's continuing to improve that, downloading chunks from different fears, re-downloading chunks not delivered on time, etc. First tests are done. Looks like in the new year, he's going to extract his first PR. So that's something that is actually a pretty big step that he's kind of had in Skunk Works for a bit. And what that will allow is more rapid sync for the nodes, and it's kind of a path to NepoPals as well, depending on how it's refined.
So right now, nodes, let's say we download Satirgo wallet and we're syncing a node, where is it finding? Is it just finding bits and pieces of the sync from any nodes that are broadcasting? A peer-to-peer kind of grabs what it needs to from each one?
For the most part, it'll connect to multiple peers and download every block. This is more of snapshot chunks from different parties, and then kind of organizing them to see if the AVL tree fits.
And how do we, and that's how you trust them, if the AVL tree fits on that snapshot?
Yeah, if it does. Now you're also ideally pulling from multiple people. And, you know, again, as he said here, you sometimes will have issues where you grab a chunk and it's not downloaded in time, whatever the connection there is with the partner. There's a lot of potential points of failure that he's working through. But that's been a work in progress for quite a while, a couple months. And he's actually getting to the point where he's able to bootstrap and sync a node with that download method. It's just a matter of refining it.
Before we go to the next part, can you talk about how, just real quickly, how long 5.0 took to think about and implement?
Oh, 5.0 was a big update. It took probably 2 years. You know, a massive rewrite in terms of a lot of the upstream dependencies. Morphic was working on that for quite a while. So, you know, 6.0 is not something that we'll see in a week, right? Rather, it's first we need to spec out the journey that we want to go on, right? So right now there's a lot of options in terms of functionality, in terms of what that roadmap should be. And a lot of that will depend on application developers, right? What do they need? What support or tooling would be best for what they need to build?
And where do these meetings take place? Is this something that people could just be a fly on the wall for at some point?
Oh, you know, as being a decentralized community, it's always a little bit messy. I'm sure that Alex is going to go to the forum. That's a place where, let's say, the community kind of started from, was this website, Ergo Forum, or Ergo Platform, forum.org.
I'll put the link up.
I'm murdering it, because it's just saved as my favorite, right? But that's been kind of a place for core communities discussions for a long time. And so that's a place that a lot of the times we revert back to. We still have very active community on Discord and Telegram, and they have that bridge magic. So certainly people can be a fly on a wall in the developer chats. But, you know, even that sometimes just gets a little messy.
Yeah, I find it's challenging to post to a forum, you know, as opposed to Telegram or Discord. You know, Telegram or Discord, if, you know, you can say, oh, yeah, sorry, I was wrong. That's right. And then it's, you know, 50 lines up an hour later and nobody cares. Mm. In a forum like this, you know, you feel like you got to be a little more conservative.
Yeah, there's still an edit button. But yeah,
that's true. But you do look like a dip if you change your point of view there.
Yeah.
On the edit button.
Kind of is where a lot of our core information came from, is the forum. So that's always the best place to be a fly on the wall, in my opinion. Discord's probably a little bit more up to date in terms of current news, but the forum has a lot of good historical information on there, or just learning.
Very cool. And then he did some proposals for DEXI contracts.
Yep, that's still there's still some parameters that are being fully refined. You know, so I wouldn't say that DEXI is fully finished, but the majority of the actual contracts are done. It's just polishing some details and asking questions about, you know, stability long term.
Oh, and just to circle back up to where was it a little bit, to Rosenbridge, as a pseudo dev, a faux dev, I call myself. It's extremely hard to get people to test your stuff, and it's extremely hard to test somebody's stuff. You know, you may jump onto it and have good intentions, but you know, it's not necessarily a high priority for yourself to do that kind of thing. So anybody, you don't have to be a dev to test this stuff. When they call for testing and open betas and that kind of stuff, hop on, try to break it. You know, sometimes
have fun. That's what I would recommend.
Yeah, exactly. Go for it.
Historically, I would say that probably the best incentive I've seen in the Ergo ecosystem in terms of getting user engagement and testing is the tip bot. You know, like, hey, if you can find something, you know, have it, we'll give you a tip, right? That incentive works really well in that situation.
What happened? Who was coming out with wooden nickels? Wasn't that supposed to happen soon?
With what?
Somebody's coming out with wooden nickels.
Nickels?
It might have been Cafe, honestly. Somebody or curbside. I can't remember. One of them was. All right, we got a captain coming up here.
All right, so Nemo is working on Fleet. Looks like he's added two utility functions. Also working on Sigma Phi, which, you know, is basically the front end side of Sigma Finance. One thing that I know that Nemo is excited that I talked to him about is this implementation. Number one, you'll get the UI on Nautilus, but it actually gives him the first, let's say, battle testing of Fleet in terms of supporting an application. So it does, let's say, will lead to improvements on both sides in terms of plugging in Fleet and using it to connect, you know, the back end and front end.
I think you just made a word, Joe, flugging, which is plugging on Fleet. But the cool thing about this too is that if any of you guys were listening to when she's announced the project that he wrote for the back end of this, is that some revenue will go to Cheese as a contract builder, unless of course somebody you know, clones a contract and writes him out of it. And then also the ability to fundraise for Captain Nemo as well is written into the back end that she said Captain could plug in his thing there for the front end development and make a little stream off that as well, which is great.
Yeah, and that was actually part of the core intent of Fleet, was to act as a bridge, so to speak, between the back end and the front end.
That is cool.
So it's the first like implementation of that, which, you know, if it goes well and becomes a standard, we'll see a lot more applications being plugged into the wallet.
Very cool. We've got HQER, high quality Ergo, won't DM.
You going to take that one or do you want me to?
No, I can take it. He's making a statement here, which I think is very noble, very important, that ErgCube is not his project. It's a community collab, which I think he's been trying to prove and implement over the last several months, where he'll bring people in to help work on a page. He'll ask for help on content and that kind of stuff. And he'll also reach out to projects and do their design work. Like you see, like, you know, we saw above with the Rosen Bridge with that kind of stuff that he's working on. You'll also see his pieces there on Twitter for a little infographic that he'll make, you know, which I think I heard somebody say one time that they prefer those kind of little infographics as opposed to the text tweets, because you can see it all in one shot kind of thing on a Twitter. So he's added CEX, known addresses, supply, KYC conditions, direct buy links. Essentially, he listed all the CEXs and gave their ERG supply as well as a buy button for there. Top five mining pool hash rates, new listings, and last sold NFTs. He's worked with, I think he worked with CryptoQuokka or Hazy here with Sky Harbor, I think, for that. Maybe he mentioned it last week. And the API help with Aberg, or maybe he messed up. Does that make sense, the API for Sky Harbor with Aberg?
I don't know.
I could be messing up, but yeah, let's see. Native token dashboard, QX price bot. Those are my pricing bots, which were... working on some backend stuff with Spectrum right now to get those old charts back up. And Buller Bear rating system for projects. So yeah, he's trucking right along. All right, we've got Morphic with Sigma. What is Sigma, Joe?
All right, so Sigma, you know, if you look at where Ergo was born from, we were born from ScoreX, right? It's kind of like the core dependency that led to Ergo. And so a lot of what Morphic does is he works with, let's say, dependencies and kind of flowing them through the network, right? Where here, you know, we're working on like the core client. He always does work in Sigma first. And, you know, if that is then approved, we get a new reference client version that's born from that toolkit, right? So one thing that he's been working on quite a lot is 5.0, and he's still been optimizing 5.0, removing a lot of the 4.0 interpreter code. So, you know, that kind of gives like the test bed for new reference clients, you could call it, right? So it looks like he's created a few PRs for Alex to review. One thing that he's working on as well is getting support for Scala 2.13, which is a newer version than what, let's say, Ergo was initially built with. So it's kind of updating the version of Scala that we run. Then with Sigma.js, that is the goal is to take the AppKit and, let's say, Fleet and keep these tools updated in parallel. That way they have equal functionality and dApp developers can use, you know, AppKit, they can use Fleet, they can do the same things, provides the same tools.
So Sigma.js will translate essentially that so that Fleet can utilize it easier?
Yep, trying to create parity there between these two tools to where, you know, you can update them in sync to where you don't create this situation where you can have one functionality here, but it doesn't translate into the other tool. So, you know, that's extremely valuable in terms of let's just say, keeping the development environment in sync. And that's something that Morphic is continually working on, is those two, let's say, core goals. Looks like next up with SigmaJS, he's working on, you know, the transaction signing coming from Fleet, and then we'll get a new release candidate if the current one is approved. If not, it'll get kicked back to him to address, you know, whatever comes up.
Cool. Now, I had forgotten about Sigma Explorer. This is Pulsar's Sigma Explorer. And I loaded up, I'll put it in the middle here over top of this. But do you mind explaining what Sigma Explorer is, Joe?
Sure. So it looks like it's a new instance of the Explorer, I believe. I haven't really been tracking Sigma Explorer too much. It's Pulsar's kind of comes and goes from the dev update. So I haven't really stayed up to date on what he's working on.
Okay, here, let me bring it up actually real quick here. So let's shrink this a little bit. So I believe it's more of a kind of a different view on Explorer. And let me slide this whole page across so you can see it.
Yes, that's beautiful. Nice to see different UIs.
Super cool. I mean, it's crazy how much work people put into this kind of stuff. And, you know, all you see is a finished project, but my goodness, the amount of hours this guy probably put in.
There's always a lot of grind in the back end that's never appreciated.
Absolutely crazy. All right, we got Spectrum Finance.
All right. Ilya's always busy. Looks like with Spectrum, they're doing a lot of work with their off-chain bots.
Sorry about that. I felt he needed another emoji there. I felt a little lonely with just one little emoji.
Looks like they're working on their stable swap and AMM protocol simulations, implementing Sigma Prover. Yeah, so they're doing a ton of stuff. I'm not sure. Yeah, off-chain bot stuff.
And I think it's a good time to mention too that Spectrum has a Ergo raffle still out that hasn't closed yet, I think, to completely, but suggest some functionality design changes to the Explorer interface. Mm-hmm. And if we could make a link here, you had said that one of the core devs that created Explorer is actually
Ilya.
Exactly. So it's not like this is out of the blue or anything. It's not
like he doesn't have the technical capacity to do this and do it well. Ilya's a robot. He's all over the place, always building stuff. Looks like also the front end. Looks like they're changing around their yield farming streams. Looks like the execution, you know, front end. Looks like, front to back. Optimization.
That's awesome. And they have to, they're taking on Cardano too. So they have, they got double the workload as far as that goes. I mean, sure, there's a lot of ideas and frameworks they can reuse, but.
Yeah, and they're building the layer too. That's their ultimate goal.
That's right. Whew, my goodness. That's amazing. And here we go. He's got his update this week that you mentioned last week.
Yes, it's Ergo. They showed up. Looks like he released version 1.5.1. Those of you that don't know, Satergo is a full node. Let's say program, super easy to use, and now it is super beautiful. Special thanks to Nadi for a lot of her front-end work there. Looks like we also get derived addresses are now automatically restored.
I remember that being a little bit of a confusing thing for some of the stuff, yeah.
Looks like let's see, setup can be fully navigated using the keyboard. Auto update is now available for the node, which is a huge simple benefit, and users can load a custom style sheet to modify their user interface design. Awesome.
And just a reminder, this is a one package shop. He bundles Java in as well, and it points to the Java that he bundles into the run folder. So you just download it and double click on the executable and it's syncing.
Super easy. Green button. I like it.
Yeah, it's great. All right. Oh, we got some duck pools updates today.
Crass has been working on duck pools and it's kind of been ongoing with testing. It looks like the small update is that he's working on a user guide, which is great to see. You know, whenever you have these type of tools, any type of information that can help.
Who's got time to write that, Joe?
Yeah, you know, if you can teach users their assumptions and how things work, that's huge. Not that anybody will read it and listen, but at least it's there, right?
Yes, and as a dev, you can say, stop asking me questions. Just read the damn guide that I spent time
on. Right. Smart. Looks like he's talking with Marty about the potential for a Duck Pools token in early 2023. So I'm sure the ErgoPad community is pretty excited about that. Proper announcement will be made regarding these things, but rest assured, a token launch will not impede on the purity of our platform and would be free from artificial utility. That's great to see. I secretly hope we see some mechanism of profit sharing, but I'm not on the team, and you know that's completely up to them. But nice to see that development. As for recent dev artwork, SigUSD pool contracts written and nearly ready for public beta testing. Awesome, playing around with GraphQL to lower the front end loading times. Great to see. I'm excited for duck pools.
Do you still have some lending in duck pools? I think I forgot about mine. I got to go check it out.
I don't know. I actually probably don't at this point. About XL. So
what's that?
I'm not sure about XL. I was testing their lending. I don't know. I forgot.
Was it Crass that did the triple layer inception to see how he leveraged against himself three times? Was that Crass that did that announcement on Twitter?
I believe so. Yeah.
Maybe I missed the announcement, but I wonder how that was going.
Let's see.
I mean, it's only one erg times three, so it can't be too terrible regardless.
I've lost more in Blobtopia than that, sadly. But...
are you a oat whale?
No, I'm more just like a little fish, but
Okay. And Crass is gonna be on the show next week. Awesome. I just got confirmation. Now he can't back out whatsoever because we've announced it. Okay, let's see. I think there's a couple chats here, and we have Crypto Quokka right here from Sky Harbor.
All right, so Sky Harbor's still testing their cart checkout. Those of you that don't know, you'll be able to potentially put multiple NFTs and use it more like a Web2 store where, you know, you get a total and click on a button and everything happens on the back end without you needing to know about it. Looks like they've released their docs, which, you know, helps connect to their API and open source smart contracts. Looks like their GraphQL query improvements are making things a little bit faster for users. And looks like ErgoPay might show up in the cart checkout, which would be huge. That way you could potentially buy from your phone and, you know, just
a toilet. Yeah.
Simple, easy user experience.
That's awesome. And just a ping for Sky Harbor in that these guys are really, I think we mentioned on the show a couple of weeks ago, their idea is that they're essentially an interface for all their smart contracts to do this. And anybody's welcome to tap in, from what I believe, into those to create their own NFT store front end for that kind of thing too. Which is really cool, really, really in the spirit of Ergo. Let's see. I think we have one or two more down here somewhere. Yes. Mark showed up this week. Guns blazing.
All right. So in terms of documentation, looks like he's been working with Cafe and Rustin. And actually, was it Rustin that did the Ergo Mixer on Android?
Yeah. So Rustin did the... did the full node on Android. And then a couple days later, I did the mixer on my Surface Duo. And cool. Then I sent him the instructions. He's like, these suck. I wrote my own. And he did it himself, and he did it on both phones. So it was really cool. So he's got two videos up, I think. And I think Mark just posted a tweet about them on Ergo Docs too. So he's got two full tutorials on that, which, I mean, the implications are really cool in that you can run a node on your phone and point your wallet to that as well, right there in one spot. It was really cool.
Decentralization is collective localization. Right. So that type of thing, making it easier to localize infrastructure is always big. Not sexy sounding, but it's a big deal, in my opinion.
And I think in Rustin, the phone that he has is a Galaxy S8 Plus, which is from 2017. It's got like 3 gigs of RAM, 32 gig hard drive, and it's running both the mixer and the node at the same time. It's great.
It's amazing. Also looks like he's tidying up the solo mining section, restructured the ecosystem section, giving each applicant its own page, fixed the latex bug so things should auto-load. Looks like in Discord, went through and cleaned out the channels and roles a little bit. And on Ergo Forum, started to restructure and tidy the forum. So Mark is a... Yeah, he's amazing at that type of information organization.
And the amount of lift that this is too. Who's the, is it Atlas? I think of Mark as Atlas, holding up the social chat circle and foundation of Ergo Discord and Telegram. There's just so much going on, and he's always there to clean it up and organize it. And it's amazing, the amount of lift that he has to do.
Yeah, a lot of the time I'm old school, man, like pen and paper, pencil and notebook. But yeah, he's got skills that I don't have. Let's just say that.
I think that's it. No, we got some Ergo names, and we got Bald.
Oh, we got quite a few that snuck in late.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
All right. So with Ergo names, looks like they successfully minted a token and updated the chain AVL in the same transaction, wrote a sync engine to sync off-chain code and store information locally, writing proxy contract to ensure the same miner fee is paid for all transactions submitted to the smart contract, and taking the POC system and turning into a full backend that anyone can run locally, and that's huge.
So I get Ergo names confused with that other Ergo hack that was there. Ergo names allows you to actually choose. Can you fill me in before I say it wrong?
So what Ergo Names does is you use like a NFT, a unique identifier, you put it in your wallet and it acts as a type of identity token, is the simplest way to put it. So an example, if you were to create the Ergo name QX, right? And I needed to pay you, or I was just really happy and wanted to send you some love, I could actually type in QX instead of your wallet address and send a transaction that way, which just makes things easier. Now, some people will say, but I'm, you know, like privacy. Okay, don't use it. Right?
Yeah. And that's similar to in the real world as far as the web world goes. That's essentially a DNS entry. You're putting a text-based name to a numerical address.
Yeah, it kind of moves things in the DNS direction. The back end works a little goofy if you're thinking DNS, but the front end's kind of the same. You know, some people will like it for having a forward-facing public account that's easy to work with. Other people will say, hey, I want to be, you know, 9xq047, you know, whatever, and not have my identity out there. Some people will say I'll have a pseudo identity. You know, it's an interesting tool, great for DeFi, have fun with it. That's what I would say.
Yeah, and that's where the mixer comes into play too. If you are worried about that at some point, you can always move it from that wallet pretty quickly to a mixer, and then who knows where it goes and who knows what naughty stuff you spend that with in the future. All right, we've got good old MG Pi.
All right, so with Comet, fixed a minor issue in the lottery smart contracts, made Comet off-chain bots decentralized so anyone can run them and get a small reward. That's huge. You know, that's having open source off-chain bots, big tool for people that want to use them, need to use them, and is currently finishing up the bot by writing documentation, That's amazing.
Did anybody win the lottery this week? I think we're up to like 450 million or something.
Rolling over. I don't know how many erg it is now, but those of you that are degenerates and want to play, man, the prize is getting bigger, I guess.
I think the last video somebody get comment the comment Santa came in and gifted you some comment the next day.
Oh,
you should check your wallet. Yeah.
All right.
We have Ann Unreal.
All right. So for the auction house, he's redesigned the auction cards. Looks like it's more minimalist. Removed the timer on top and used the text in the bottom part of the card to show the remaining time. Looks like shows similar artwork to an artwork at the bottom. So you have some reference if you're looking at an NFT. Dark mode is implemented completely. Some people really like that. Are you a dark mode guy?
Yeah, I totally am. I have astigmatism, so those bright kind of things make it hard for me to focus quickly. So darkening anything, it's a lifesaver, 100%.
I'm too lazy. I always just go with default. The UI is responsive. It looks like that's been implemented. Major features are already implemented. So looks like they're continuing constant testing, debugging in the UI and API to fix interactions. And that's where most of the team is focused these days.
All right. We didn't have this person last week. Network Spore. Are you familiar with him?
A little bit. Community dev. Looks like he's been working on a P2P file system as well as a game, I believe, to where, you know, having a unique P2P file system actually has a lot of interesting potential use cases in terms of not only acting as like a core repository if needed, but, you know, the ability to kind of create more community interaction. Very curious to see where that goes. So it looks like he's playing around with media files, and, you know, you can look at something like Terahertz is a good example where, you know, having a blockchain and a P2P file system, you know, that have some overlap is always a pretty cool idea. So it looks like that's what he's been playing with, creating that P2P file system, playing around with media stuff, continuing to play around with the libraries that can, you know, potentially use encryption, a lot of cool stuff. I'm not 100% sure what the end game is there, but need to see.
It's nice to see these new things popping up in the, you know, in the market that we're in right now. It's crazy. We got a low-key nerd.
All right. So those of you that don't know, low-key nerd and Blitz trading card game. It's kind of a community-oriented trading card game at this point. I'm still working on some testing and development. Matchmaking is officially working. So I'm sure that testing is about to get a lot more fun. Looks like it's buggy, but still works. So that's a big plus. Looks like he reached out to the Nervous team and he's considering interoperability between chains, which is pretty cool, to where you could potentially have multiple packs from multiple chains. And you're all playing the same game, and, you know, even you could build on that and say, okay, well, you know, Ergo is going to be this type or feature or whatever, and, you know, Cardano is going to be them, and Nervos is going to be that, and strengths and weaknesses and all kinds of interesting use cases you could think of in terms of gaming there. Looks like he'll be posting the end year recap, and he'll cover the game progress, accomplishments, finances, give some shout outs. Great to see. I'm excited to see what they come up with.
That's just really cool. I just had a pretty long conversation with Sisyphus Push today about, mm-hmm. he's a big NFT guy. And the thought was, you know, you have these NFTs, which are, you know, set in stone, essentially. They're minted, they're immutable. How do you, on chain at least, how do you show that, let's say you use it as a game character in Blitz TCG, how do you show that character now is a +2 to their sword and a +10 to their stamina on chain? You know, not, you know, it's easy off chain, you just keep it in a database, you're done. So we are speaking about ways to do that, and in minting newer NFTs with specific stats that in its data had a reference to the original token ID, so you can at least look the two up together and make sure they were, you know, that kind of thing. As well as it brought us all the way to rule, oh my goodness, I said rule 34, EIP 34, which is, I think MGPI is actually working on trying to implement that, where you can take, you can create NFTs and you can then give out tokens to people that are able and authorized to mint more NFTs with the collection number of that NFT, so they're in the series. Did I explain that right, Joe?
Close enough.
Perfect. The close enough counts in horseshoes and hand grenades and ergo.
That is just a toolkit, right? It actually has a lot of interesting use cases, in my opinion. Like, you can get to the idea of fractional NFTs, or you know, then you use the notion of an NFT as a singleton, to where, you know, sometimes you need that to identify a contract. Well, then you can have fractionalized ownership of a contract, which is, you know, a really interesting way to look at profit distribution or other stuff in DeFi. So as a tool, it could be really powerful. We'll see where it goes.
Because right now there's no way to recognize that an NFT is part of a series, correct? In Ergo chain, at least. In Cardano, you have the policy ID, which shows that if you look up this policy ID, it shows all the NFTs that were created under that policy ID. That doesn't exist in Ergo. So essentially, this is trying to do that. So you know that anything minted under this ID essentially is, you know, legit and part of that originally.
Yeah.
Really cool. Really cool. Okay, we've got Ergflip here. Not much, working on that roulette game that we saw last week.
Yep.
You ready to release some erg, Joe?
Oh, I'm already on tilt, right? QX, I'm already down enough that I'll win it back eventually, right?
You know what would be fun? Like using this as a fundraising technique. So saying, look, you know, rewards are reduced to 10%. Mm-hmm. Okay, as opposed to 100%. And if you play roulette during this time, anything that you lose and goes to the house will be donated to this project or this kind of thing. So that would be an interesting, it'd give people something fun to do with a chance of winning back money at a lesser rate, of course, as well as, you know, donating something. Interesting. Yeah,
charitable gambling is always interesting.
Yeah, right?
Back when you know, Night Owl was a little bit more active, I was always curious, like, okay, let's say somebody builds a slot machine or some instance where it looks like a slot machine. How interesting would it be if then you have NFT projects that, you know, plug in their own slot machine and, you know, create the prizes and like there's all kinds of interesting ways these can be reused. But yeah, roulette, that's dangerous.
But it goes to charity, so you don't feel bad about it in the end. So then speaking of the earlier, we got MGPI again. He snuck in another update today, I guess, that he finished the documentation for Comet Off-Chain Bot, and he showed the GitHub there.
Wrap that up. Yeah, that's impressive.
That is really cool. all right, two things, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
One thing. First thing is just a note to everybody that we're going to start. Let me call for a sec. Just a note for everybody that we're going to start. The SigmaNuts are going to start a weekly Wednesday marketing community update that's going to kind of mimic what you guys do on Sunday and Wednesday morning in the dev chats. I'll make an announcement Tuesday night in the marketing chat. And also a kickoff on Wednesday morning in the marketing chat at 1 p.m. UTC, just like the dev chat. And the idea is that everybody from the community, everybody that's a project runner that wants to give an update, let's say Ergflip is coming out with a new game in 2 days or something, put that there. Or Blitz TCG is coming out with something new or wants the beta testing, they put it there. Then not only can people just read that feed directly that prefer to read those feeds, just like the dev chat, it will let us as the SigmaNauts talk about it in the Sig update. It'll also let us use the Sigmanauts Twitter account to promote those or be ready for a tweet that's coming up so we can retweet it or like it or that kind of thing and interact with it. Hopefully it will give a one-stop shop for people to come and see things and also allow us to promote it. So we'll see how that goes.
You know what the best part of that is?
What's that?
I'll be able to watch it.
That's true. That is true. That's a good point.
About the Sigmanaut update, other than me being here, is I never really watch videos of myself. So having like new content that's not me is great.
That's funny to know, Joe. I think CW does the same thing. So that's very. I think Johnny Depp does that, and a couple other actors like Al Pacino. You know, like I think you say sometimes. Last week before the video was rolling, you said something, you know, if I say something, I say it and it's in the past, and there's no change in it. We'll just move forward. So I think following that ethos for that is pretty neat.
Yeah, I kind of drew the short straw with the video thing. It was like, we can understand you the best, so you have to do it. I was like,
oh, that's funny. Okay, final question. Might take a little bit, might not take a little bit. You know, I know it's hard, especially in Ergo, you know, when we fight looking for leadership or anything like that, and we want to be decentralized. But, you know, in other chains that I've been in times of, you know, bear markets and lower markets, it's really nice to hear from somebody that's involved, at least in the central core, about, you know, their ideas of the project and their prospects of the project. So my question to you, Joe, is why are you still here? Why are you still in Ergo?
Why am I still in Ergo? It's very simple. I know that the goal of Alex has always been to try to take blockchain and create basically financial systems that are transparent, that are open, that have clear assumptions and have kind of clear boundaries of trust, right? You know, when we look into blockchain, a lot of the times it is a P versus P environment, right? You know, that's inevitable to the nature of trading, is that, you know, we can say, okay, well, if I'm actively, you know, trading ERG and you're actively trading ERG, we're actually to some degree opponents in the same trading game, because in a way it is zero sum. And I don't know, you get, let's say a lot of actors that have advantages in that P versus P game, you know, and sometimes it's even foundations, right? You can look at FTM, you know, they were the one that wrote the article. So you can say, okay, they've actively disclosed how they're trading against their community. You know, and the Ergo Foundation doesn't do that. Now, you know, number one, it's never been our intent to be a profit, let's say, creating entity. It's more been to say, okay, let's try to create open source frameworks with, you know, pretty clear assumptions of how they work. Why they're designed that way, let's then give it to people and let them be the market, let them create business. And let's try to teach the principles that are important. You know, open source code is one thing that I say a lot. It's not always popular in this space, but I don't care. You know, the reason is it's then a public utility. Everybody owns it, can change it, interact with it, understand it. Then it creates a more resilient network, right? So for me, I'm here because I believe in first principles. And I think that as a whole, the cryptocurrency industry has become very much focused on the forward-facing profit side, right? You know, everybody will sell you some solution that will solve everything. But in terms of just having core assumptions that something is trustless, you know, that, you know, you can look at the security parameters of it, you can go through the code of it, you can understand how it works, you can run it locally. Those kind of core principles are disappearing due to just the nature of Moon. And you know, it's something I see sad. And in a way, it's like, if that trend continues, decentralization doesn't matter, right? You can even look at like, I don't know, I'll pick on Ethereum. You know, a lot of their transactions are now being censored based on location. And, you know, some people will say, okay, well, it doesn't matter because the producers that are not censored will eventually include their transactions, right? That completely dismisses the reality that in PVP finance, sometimes your proximity to the block matters. Like your ability to be included in a transaction matters. Otherwise, you know, it's, you have a system where you have different tiers of citizens, you know, where you have kind of like the block producer themselves can always just include whatever they want for minimal cost. And then you have the users who may have a cost. And then you have those poor schmucks that they have to wait until, you know, the jurisdictionally appropriate block arrives, and then they can get on that bus. So, you know, trying to create open and fair networks is something that I'm interested in. I think there's a tremendous amount of value there. And it also creates a more open environment where any user anywhere can participate. So why am I here? Core principles. Just that simple.
And you feel Ergo's still headed in that direction and continuing to follow those core principles?
I think that we discuss it enough that people at least ask the question. Now, you know, these are like ecosystems where there's a financial incentive. So I know that there's a ton of people that, you know, they may have Ergo as some element of their portfolio, you know, whatever that is. And, you know, they may be, let's say, active participants or at least hodlers across multiple ecosystems. That's fine. But at least it gives an audience to talk about things that I believe are important in these systems and these technologies. And in my opinion, are ultimately why they exist. And if you look at like that core intent, I think a lot of value has to be derived on top of that. Otherwise, you just get into weird like SQL clubs.
You know, I said this maybe a couple of weeks back. I may have been on Hash It Out with you guys. My dream here in Ergo is that I don't want to ever sell my erg. Yep. I want something to be done that my erg can kind of work for me in the future and provide me some sort of, you know, residual income there. I might not be able enough to live off of, you know, and quit my job, but my erg will work for me as far as that goes.
Yeah, you have this, let's say, digital asset that's, you know, some store of electrical / computational power. And, you know, over time, I think that there's a lot you can do with that. It ultimately will break down to what the application developers come up with. And, you know, I really hope that the mindset of people building on top of Ergo is always more long-term focused in terms of like non-fragility and survivability versus just value extraction, because there's so much of that in the crypto industry that you know, I won't call anything out by name, but you know, it's like, okay, I think this project is built for 2 years to enrich some people rather than to actually create a tool that, you know, will outlive them and provide a lot of utility and value to others.
Yeah, and we're never gonna, you know, win against that. There's always gonna be, you know, and that's what it is. People come in and they extract the value that they feel like is good enough to get out of it, and then they're gone. Yep. But you know, in leading on to that, when you were speaking earlier about your core principles, it makes me so happy when, you know, and it's all spammers, of course, coming in. When they DM me and they're saying, you know, because they see that I'm an admin in the Ergo platform chat. So I get DMs to say, hey, I need to buy X amount of Erg kind of thing. And of course, it's a spam. But mm-hmm. It makes me happy that even if a legitimate VC came in and said, hey, I need to buy 500,000 Erg, can you OTC it over the counter to me? And the answer is, fuck off. You buy it like everybody else on a DEX or a CEX. And that's the way it is. You got to get in line with everybody else.
Yeah. And if there's always the potential they DM the right person and it's real, right? But there's so much risk there that, you know, it's not worth it. The Ergo Foundation is too small. right? We bootstrapped the network, you know, people will say, okay, 4%. But what they have to realize is that day one, that the network started, right? And, you know, we had to build exchange access. We had to build mining pool partners. We had to, you know, let's say, kind of build out the economy itself for Ergo. So just because we had some initial emissions initially, that, you know, wasn't worth the value that it was today. So, you know, we've always kind of been frugal, which I'm fine with. I would say, you know, let's say as a person, I probably do lean more towards like the conservative side of financial interactions versus just, you know, spending all willy-nilly and then, you know, getting in a hole that you don't want to be in, right? So, you know, in our lifetime since inception, the amount that we've built and delivered relative to cost, I would say is highly efficient compared to the industry as a whole and what people fundraise and then what they actually produce.
Yeah, agree. Well, I think that's, you know, CW comes back next week, Joe. So I really appreciate you willing to blend the dev update and the Sigma update. But we'll be split up again maybe sometime in the future when CW is sick and you don't want to run the dev up by yourself. Yeah, we can join these again.
Anybody in the ecosystem can always ping me. I try to make time.
That's awesome. I really appreciate it, Joe. Everybody, we'll be back. Check out our tweets and our announcements for the Wednesday community marketing update that I mentioned earlier. Hopefully we can kick that off to a good start. We'll have some SIG updates for you next week and next week's show. We've been off for 2 weeks for those meetings, but we'll try to get you some updates there about what we've been doing in the meantime. Thanks so much for watching. Joe, thanks again. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, happy to come.
Have a great night, everybody.